Blog Talk Radio.
Another edition of Fight Words on the Fight Words News Network. Fight Words is brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation. The men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of Police and Fire Services, the doctors and nurses and first responders to COVID, and the wonderful people in the markets that keep our stock, our food stocks up. Tonight's program is dedicated. We have two types of dedications. First is a very sad one. Yesterday morning at approximately 9:15, a lady lost control of her car on the Florida Turnpike and unfortunately ran into three deputies, Miami-Dade deputies on motorcycles, and they lost their lives. So to their families and to the Miami-Dade brothers, we send out our deepest sympathies and hope things go a little bit better for you over there. The other one is an extremely happy note. We're going to be joined by one of our former fighters who has not only been very good in his professional life as a boxer, but has proceeded in his professional life, and that's we're dedicating this program to the newly appointed Lieutenant Frank Philippone of the Newport News Police Department. Frank let me know the other day that his date for promotion is December 12th. We're going to have him on a little bit, and we're going to talk to him about that. And we hope that everything there goes very well. He's a great guy, wonderful family. So we can't say much more about what a great guy he is. Caden, good evening. Z, good evening. Let's see. Let's start out with, Caden, what did you think of Bo Nichols' outing this last week? Oh, I'm sorry. It's Tony. I got it mixed up.
Sir.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, Tone.
That's fine.
How about you, Z? What do you think about Bo Nichols' outing this week?
Oh, I didn't see it, but if you don't mind, I do want to give a shout out to the Joint National Guard Reserves, the National Guard Reserves building in Newcastle, Delaware. I work there, and they are some of the nicest people. I work at the military police every day, and they are some of the nicest, cleanest people that I've been around. So I need to, you know, this show is definitely for the military and everything. I do want to give a shout out to where I work every day. I didn't see the Bo Nichols fight. I saw the John Jones fight.
Yeah. I'll okay. Well, we'll get to that. Bo Nichols cleaned the liquid cage with Paul Craig this last weekend. Never a doubt in anybody's mind who was in control of that that whole fight. It only lasted, I think, one minute into the second round, and he really dominated him. Let's go to John Jones. Z? Z, you there? Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, I'm sorry. You said, about John Jones.
Yes.
I saw Stipe come in at 42 years old. It was reminiscent of Mike Tyson's fight to me. He was really too old. And he fought.
Mm-hmm.
He pushed every punch. And, like, you tell that, like, he was older and he wasn't sharp. He didn't fight for how many years? So
yeah.
I saw
yeah.
that and age in Stipe.
Mm-hmm.
Which... I'm pretty sure that, Caden could kind of testify to this. We expected that out of Stipe. We did not expect Stipe that we've seen that fought and beat Daniel Cormier years ago. Because we don't have that Stipe. It's been years since Stipe's fought. At the same time, and here's something that I did notice, John Jones is always sharp and accurate.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I think is going to give him problems is when he doesn't have time to set it up. If a guy could get in his chest and deal with his wrestling a little bit, Daniel Cormier had the formula. He just caught John Jones at the wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
Like John Jones, when Daniel Cormier saw him, John Jones was legitimately the best fighter from light heavyweight to heavyweight. Sometimes you're just not going to beat that guy. No matter who you are, if that's a guy, that's a guy. What I did see is this, and as impressive as John Jones looked, I don't think he's a guy anymore. I think that he's lost. As easy as Stipe was for him, I think he's lost a step. there's certain mm-hmm. aspects of seeing to where I'm not going to say it could have been easier for him, but I think he, like, I've seen some things to where it's like he looks a little more plodding, a little more, and maybe it's just for that fight. Maybe it's the heavyweight. I don't know, but I think I know as much as I do know fighting, I'm sorry. I think I've seen just a slight decrease in John Jones's thing. As easy as he did speak that.
What do you think, Caden?
I kind of joined in here on the end of that. I don't know, because that finish, that spinning, like that 360 heel kick, whatever that was, that was insane. That was beautiful. But I do know what you mean. And watching that fight, it did seem like it was a different, slower John Jones than we're used to. But I still think that he didn't lose any of that fight. I don't think that he was, you know, going out there looking for an immediate finish. But also, like, Stipe was going in there, man. I don't want to put any light on Stipe for what he put out there in that octagon the other night. And, you know, every time John was trying to put that pressure on him, you know, he would hit Stipe. Stipe would back up and hit him with the good counters every time. And it was something that you really like to see out of him, something that he's, like, really – I feel like that is just classic Stipe, you know?
I think that's part of where I saw John Jones slowing up, because Stipe mm-hmm. pushed every punch. And yeah. John got hit with a few of those punches. If Stipe had that snap to where he was when he was younger, it might have had more effect. But Stipe was 42, and he fought like 42-year-old guy that came in the ring, and you know, he wasn't the younger Stipe. John Jones is more in his prime, and at prime for prime, I don't know who to. I mean, I might have still had to bet on John Jones.
Yeah. For me, 100%.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
You see what John was able to do younger in his career. You know, he walked through pretty much every single great fighter in the UFC's resume and beat them all when he was like 20 to 24 years old.
Yep.
It's insane. It's crazy. But my biggest takeaway from that entire fight, you're going to agree with me on this, is Tom Aspinall can beat John Jones. I 100% think that Tom Aspinall can – I confidently can say that that Tom Aspinall has a good shot at beating John Jones.
I'm good with that one. When you said a good shot, he has the tools. He has the tools, and one thing is this. Tom Aspinall is active. A guy who's active enough to where John Jones can't set it up, I think that gives him problems. He didn't win every fight when he fought every round when he fought Daniel Cormier. He won clearly. We already know the second fight he kicked him in the head and then made him cry. I'm sorry. I love Daniel Cormier, but yeah, that's what happened. But the first fight, they fought at light heavyweight and heavyweight. If I'm correct, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. John came back and fought him again at heavyweight.
Yep. So the first fight was at light heavyweight. That light heavyweight fight, that was kind of back and forth for a minute, and John started taking over in the later round. I don't know if John – here's the thing. Daniel Cormier is a different fighter than Aspinall. He is not as active as far as, like, just as far as his really his output. Daniel Cormier is not an output guy like Aspinall. At the same time, I'm not sure if John Jones is strong enough to handle Aspinall, because Aspinall will go ahead and punch himself into a clinch. And I'm not sure if he wants to do that with John Jones. I'm not sure to ask him. Because one thing is this. If it gets into a wrestling match, I'm going to favor John Jones over Aspinall.
Mm-hmm.
I know Aspinall, but simple and plain, if they get skin to skin, I'm going to favor John Jones. Even in the clinch. Once it gets skin to skin, I have to favor John Jones.
Yeah. He's a wild animal when it comes to that stuff. The elbows he throws is the greatest elbows in UFC.
Oh, my God.
Like his clinch work and his close combat work something like I've never seen before.
And he's calm. He's really calm and collected. So, and he's so calm that he'll lull you into you think he's going to take you now. Next thing you know, you get hit in the head with an elbow.
You know what I love about John Jones too. I think it's why he's so confident. It's because he knows he's the best. And I don't know, when he has that, you have that thought in your head, and you've really proven it so many times, you're like, I'm that guy. Like, I feel like you put John Jones with anybody in history, in history of planet Earth. This is a large stretch, but John Jones is the man that walks out of that room. I think he's the best fighter the world's ever seen.
Wait for weight. It will be interesting. And I say wait for weight, and we're never going to, see that. But wait for weight, I would have loved to see John Jones against a prime Anderson Silva.
Yeah.
If they matched up weight for weight at the prime, that fight would – why? Because I think – I'm going to give John Jones all the credit in the world, but a prime Anderson Silva, that's the guy. That also is the guy. John Jones does it a different way. He does it every way. But Anderson was so, he was so good on the feet that when you got him on the ground, people forgot he submitted Chael Sonnen.
Mm-hmm. I like that you brought up that the Chael Sonnen fight. Because when you think about that whole fight, right, he got the submission round 5 because Chael took him down and put himself in a triangle. Anderson
Silva. And that was a rough fight. That was a rough fight for Anderson. You're right.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. And you look at John Jones and Chael Sonnen, like they have that kind of similar style. That's why I think that John would beat Silva, because Silva was in his prime during that fight.
He was a little later in his prime.
A little later, but I would say he's still on top of the world,
Well, he proved that in the second fight to me with Chael Sonnen. But I think of the best of Anderson, I think of him when he fought Forrest.
Yeah.
Anderson, him and John Jones, I don't think – I think it goes to a decision. John has a better overall game, but, John is smart enough to do one thing to Anderson. Sit down and nullify a submission. Just lay him down every now and again. Stay safe on the feet. Lay him down and just kind of dull the match out.
Hey, Tony.
I'm sorry about that, too.
That's okay. Just got to get Tony in here. Benavides and Morrell. Tony, what's your thoughts?
Benavides is not going to lose to Morrell. And Morrell is a good fighter, and it's going to be a little bit of a tussle. But Morrell, I don't think, is ready for Benavides, what Benavides is going to give to him. And you get his fight a little bit down the road, maybe when Benavides is a little bit older, Morrell maybe come up around a little bit, maybe be a little bit better, but no, he's not going to be able to pull it off this time. He's a good fighter, but won't win it.
Okay. All right, let's go on to a better one. Yesterday afternoon, Bedabiev called out Jake Paul. All right, let's start with Tony, and let's go around the table on this one. Tony?
Oh, here we go again with Jake Paul. I love it. I hope to God that happens, and there better not be any contract signed if the outcome is going to be beat or be laying the boy out on the floor, asking for a defib box. Because I'm telling you, Jake Paul's been – all right, I won't get started. Listen,
okay.
If it's a real fight. Okay. If it's a real fight, beat or be lays him out.
Yeah, we're going to talk about a real fight when Frankie gets on. What's your thoughts, Z?
Jake, here's the thing. How many rounds is it going to be? What weight is it going to be at? That's all
mm-hmm.
I'm saying. They sanctioned eight rounds. We're good with eight-round professional fights. You know, we have four-round professional fights.
Mm-hmm.
At heavyweight, we had 14-ounce gloves with two-minute
mm-hmm.
rounds. That is not a professional
Correct.
Fight. But it got sanctioned as a professional fight. But
yeah.
legitimately, that is not a professional heavyweight boxing match that we saw.
Mm-hmm.
So what is he going to do with better? Jake Ball's the money guy, so apparently he could better be at we have a weight limit at 115, 215. We have to both weigh at 215. Jake Paul legitimately could do that. Bull better be at up. Now we're fighting with 16 hours. We're fighting with sparring gloves.
Mm-hmm.
The money guy, he can do anything he wants. So when it comes to something like that, and boxing's taking it with a smile. So I say the world of boxing. Now I like Eddie Hearn. I don't like a whole you know what? I have me and Eddie Hearn at times had issues. Eddie Hearn is one guy that I'm true to that boxing. And he said something according to the lines of, you know, sometimes it's not about money. Sometimes you do want to have the best fighter and the best. Jake Paul is not the best.
Mm-hmm.
He lost to Tommy Fury. He's not the best boxer. That's all I have to say.
Right. All right. All right, let's go, Caden. There's one for you. I know this one will get you started because I got to go get Frankie on. But what about Charles Oliveira's win over Chard the other last week?
It was what you love to see out of someone that you can, like, for me at least, and I feel like for a lot of the UFC fans. Yo, if Charles Oliveira isn't one of your favorite fighters, what are you doing? He's so pure. He does, you know, you look at his you look at his resume. He's kind of like, he reminds me of Rocky a little bit, you know? He really came out of nowhere. When he was in his younger UFC career, he had a negative record in the UFC. And then he got injured, something ticked in him, and he blazed the trail up to the top. And then met Michael Chandler there. In, what was it, 2021, 2020, something like that. And it was a good fight from both fighters, but it was a tale of two rounds, if we're going to be completely honest. It was, you know, Michael Chandler, I wouldn't even say dominating, but really putting the heat on Charles Oliveira for the entire round, knocking him down, just beating the heck out of him for an entire 5 minutes. And then Charles Oliveira comes out like a different animal out of that corner, gets the submission, cleans him up, and then he goes on. He fights who he fights, and now he finds himself back in front of Michael Chandler. But this time was different. I'm going to be honest. We saw, even though he didn't, like, knock him out or submit him, we saw a complete Charles Oliveira in that fight. We saw what he can, like, everything that he can do. On the feet, out of the wrestling world, out of the jiu-jitsu world. He's just, I don't know. That's just a performance that you love to see. It was a great win from Charles, great technical win from Charles, something that I honestly didn't expect. You know, he's never been to five rounds before, and he looked great. Even in that fifth round, you know, he was getting a little shaken up, but, you know, you can tell he was just hanging in there, trying to play it safe, and it was – It, honestly, classic, not even classic. It was unique Charles Oliveira, and that's what you love to see. So that was all happiness for me. But yeah, man, Charles Oliveira, who he fights next, I don't know, because I think Armand Saryukin is going to fight for the title against Islam. If he gets the winner of that, I could definitely see that happening, because he never got his rematch with Islam Makhachev. So I could definitely see him get another shot at the title here just from that performance alone. But where does that leave Michael Chandler? Does he now fight Conor McGregor? I don't think so. I don't think Conor McGregor is going to step into the octagon ever again. And you see, like, yep. The reason I say that is because of his activities outside of the octagon. If you follow Conor McGregor on any sort of social media, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Like, this dude is at the club every single night, popping bottles, doing whatever he wants to do. And, yeah, he looks yoked, but he's on steroids. And it's obvious that he's on steroids. His face is deforming. He looks like a chimpanzee. It's something insane. Like, we've never seen him look like this before, and you expect me to believe that he's going to go out there and fight again? No way. He's just dealing with a civil court case where he just got accused guilty of rape, and now he has to pay $200,000 to the victim. No way he steps into the octagon again. The stuff around this guy is just – I don't think so. I love Conor McGregor, and I will never not love him as a fighter. But outside the octagon, like, sticks in real life, it's like he thinks he has no repercussions for his actions, and it's just – I don't know. I don't think he'll ever step back in the octagon again, and I think that's going to leave Michael Chandler kind of cold-handed, because he'll never get that fight. And that's, like, the only fight that he's been asking for the last 2.5 years. So, little L's on Chandler's part.
Now's a good time, especially when we're talking about something in law enforcement. We're going to bring in the newest lieutenant on the police force in Newport News, right, Frank?
It's Virginia Beach.
Virginia Beach. I'm sorry, I get the two mixed up.
Yeah.
The Virginia Beach.
Yeah, I want to
finest,
Newport News, yeah.
Yeah. The finest fighter that ever walked off the in the ring. Freight Train Frankie was always known for being fast on his feet, heavy on the punch, and one of the nicest guys you'll ever want to meet in or out of the ring. We did dedicate tonight's program to him and his promotion, and we want to wish everybody and his family a very happy Thanksgiving. So, Frank, take it away.
Oh, yeah, well, I appreciate the kind words. How's everyone doing tonight? Good?
Everyone's doing good.
Yeah, it's been a crazy several years. I mean, I made sergeant in 2019, and I'm excited for this next chapter as a lieutenant, to build the workforce and I've been always building bridges in my law enforcement career between myself and the law enforcement community and the community. But now I've taken a different stance, and it's really because of Bishop T.D. Jakes. And sometimes he says that sometimes in law enforcement, being building bridges isn't enough, but being the bridge is where it's at. And so that's the goal. I'm trying to be the bridge, and trying to continue to show the community that not all law enforcement is bad, and that we're here to assist, but we also need to make sure our officers can see look through the lens of the, you know, how the community views law enforcement, and they need to be able to see the other side of it. And that's what I plan to do as a lieutenant, you know.
Hey Frankie, this is Vito. First of all, I remember, congratulations to everything you've known. I remember last time you were promoting fights to doing that. Are you still doing promoting fights to law enforcement?
My focus has changed. I haven't been doing any promotion per se, but we're trying to get a youth boxing program started through like a police athletic league.
Okay.
And I've been doing some training on the side. I got an 82-year-old client who's a former he's a former NYPD lieutenant. So it's really cool to see that. I think I can put him against Jake Paul. I think I'm ready for that.
Yeah, I hope so.
You put two against Jake Paul. Yeah. I don't think he's ready for that.
Listen, I go ahead.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead, Frank.
Funny that you said it. I've been Danny Davis over there has been doing with wraps and cuts out of Philly, right? He's been doing Jake Paul's cuts. I said, yo, man, you need to set this up. This is the only chance that Jake Paul will get to punch a police officer in the face and not go to jail. So I think this is a good spot.
Amen.
I train police officers, and you know, you got to take it easy on everybody, but my God, man, it's funny that you said that.
Frank, we talked earlier this week, you had interest in talking about the Jake Paul fight. Now Tony has almost a PCA written about the fight. So I'm going to start with you and hear your views, and then we're going to go to Tony.
Well, I tell you. First off, I'll just plug myself again. If Jake Paul wants to fight another washed-up fighter, I'm here. So anybody listening, I'll come off the couch and beat that guy.
No.
I think it was very nostalgic for me, right? I mean, you grew up watching Tyson dominate the ring and just captivating audiences, right? You know, you were mad if you went to get some popcorn during a Tyson fight because it was or a drink or use the restroom because it was over before you knew. And so I found myself sitting in front of the TV and just in anticipation. Like, I just felt like a kid back, watching these fights. What I realized in that fight is Tyson will always be Tyson, and he'll always have that punching power. His body just didn't seem like it was there to get him in the right spot. And maybe there's a little bit of pulling some punches there. But I'm thankful that Jake Paul definitely carried him through that fight, right? It was a little bit of a dignifying performance. But I know all of us were sitting in that where waiting for Tyson to land the one left hook as he bobbed underneath those punches and just knock him out. So, Jake Paul has definitely proven himself to get better in this professional boxing lane. But let's face it, he's only faced one real test, and that was in Fury, and I think we saw the outcome there, right? But he's fought other dominant athletes. But none of those guys really know what the stand-up game is like, and so I'm thankful that he gave Tyson a little bit of dignity and carried him 8 rounds.
Okay. Tony, your thoughts?
I'm going to try not to go on a rampage like last week, but where do I start? I agree that I think Jake Hall has definitely come around as a boxer. I mean, there's no doubt about it, but some stuff leaked out this week, which I sent to you, Frank, as well, about how Tyson was biting the glove, and people were asking him, okay, why were you biting? And a bunch of things, different reasons had come out. You know, of course, he had his thing. Other people had their thing as far as what they were saying. And it seemed to be that was his reminder that I can't hit Jake Paul and knock him out, because if the contract, according to what leaked out this week, was if he knocked Jake Paul out, he lost about every bit of the money that he had on the fight that was coming his way. If Jake Paul knocked him out, it was going to tarnish his legacy. Money was not going to exchange against the way it was supposed to go. So the final outcome was go 8 rounds, where Mike Tyson got his payday. And if no one – listen, I know we had had this discussion about 30-second videos with Mike Tyson and hitting the bag and all that stuff. And I went back and I watched everything this week. 30 seconds is all it needed to take for him to take Jake Paul out with one of those hits. And there's a couple times, if you go back, and I watched that fight two more times this week, and you could see where he started to throw a shot and he stopped himself. Why did he stop? The old Mike Tyson wouldn't have stopped. The old Mike Tyson had plenty of shots he could have taken he didn't take. Now, he, bum leg, bum knee, whatever, anybody can, you know. Okay, I'm getting on that pant. I'm trying really hard, trust me. I'm trying really hard. Nobody will ever convince me, ever, that that fight was not rigged, ever. I don't care what anybody says, and I don't care. And I respect everybody's career, what they do, everything. But that fight was rigged, and that's just the end of it. I'm going to leave it at that.
Okay.
Yeah, Tony, I definitely agree. I think, look, I think there's some truth to that, right? And I haven't seen the leaked information, so it'd be good to see that for sure. But it was just, like I said, I think in the first round, Tyson threw an overhand right, and it just barely missed. And I thought, it's over. He's going to catch him. And then we slowly saw what we saw. And I think everybody's just disappointed in the buildup and disappointed in how it went down for sure.
Yeah, he did throw one, and he hit Jake Paul, and I believe they wrapped up with each other shortly thereafter, and the word was, supposedly it was like, hey, you know, ease up here, you about knocked my ass out. So will we ever know? Probably not. But, and by the way, congratulations on the promotion I meant to say at the beginning. I've got on the Rampage. I promise I wouldn't, but I don't know. There's a lot that's leaking out now, so it just kind of, to me, it backs up my thoughts, but that's just my opinion.
If y'all don't mind me chiming in, and this is, first of all, let me correct what I said last week. Last week, I was taking a total boxing analysis, thinking that Mike Tyson was and I said that he should have took a Joe Frazier approach. Well, when you're 58 years old, and I had to correct myself by watching Joe Frazier when he fought George Foreman the second time. And that guy, he wasn't nearly Mike Tyson's age, and that guy couldn't move the way that Joe Frazier could move back in the day. I thought that style could beat Jake Paul at the time. Here's what I'm going to say, too. And I've got to keep it a boxing analysis. I don't want to do anything else. But boxing-wise, I did not see a thrown fight. I did not see one guy carrying the next guy. What I saw is Mike Tyson not be able to get in position to do what Mike Tyson does because Mike Tyson had explosive legs back in the day. He would Mike Tyson would methodically cut the ring off. That never was his game. He would always explode until you hit you with that 1-2 and you do that. He'd step around. Mike Tyson always had explosive legs and explosive level changes. That was the killer Mike Tyson. He would do that. He would hit you from angles. His uppercut was deadly because he would bend his knees and put it into it and explode up. That was a deadly Mike Tyson when he got in position. Mike Tyson would not cut the ring off ever. Mike Tyson was not the guy that, you know, cut space off. He would explode into the tall guys. When they would extend themselves, that was his turn to go. When they went, he went. If you notice, Mike Tyson, even Razor Ruddock was able to kind of scare Mike Tyson at times. To get a decision with it, to last. Jake Paul ran into a 58-year-old guy who kind of capitulated after round one, who kind of said, you know what, damn, man, you know what, to get to him, I'm going to have to eat, and I made my money. Jake Paul is a guy who said, darn it, I really don't want to. I still kind of respect the mystique of this guy. I don't want to step in and knock him out. I don't want to put myself out there because maybe he might explode into me. So one guy couldn't do it. The other guy was kind of scared to do it. All fight long. That's what I saw.
Right.
Just as a boxing analysis, that's what I saw. Okay. I might be wrong, but that's what I saw.
Okay, Caden, let's go over to the other side for a few minutes. Peter Yan beat the hell out of Davison Figueroa. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it wasn't, you know, Figgy's getting old, and so is Peter Yan. So I thought this was going to be like a super even fight, and I honestly thought Figgy was going to go out there and win. I was relatively right about the super even part. It wasn't, you know, they weren't too far apart from each other in terms of levels that I saw. But Piotr Jan was definitely the best, you know, better fighter on in the night. But Davison Figueroa, he looked like his spark was gone. Like it didn't look like he was going to go out there and really throw those heavy punches like he used to. It was a little different. But
okay, well let me ask you a follow up question to that. After that fight, Jan went to the papers and called out O'Malley. He said he wanted to have Sean O'Malley again. Do you think that, one, do you think that'll ever happen? And two, who do you think will win?
I think that Jan definitely has a good shot at beating O'Malley. The first time really wasn't far apart at all. Honestly, if you were asking me at the end of the fight, you know, I was watching it with all my brothers. The general consensus was that Piotr Jan won the fight. And yeah, it was a close fight, but Piotr Jan was definitely the better man of the night. And it was, honestly, a questionable decision, if we're going to be 100, if I'm going to keep it a buck. And I don't know. And you definitely saw what O'Malley did with that, the result of that fight, went on, became champion, was good, was damn good. And now Merab was just super good on that night. But before we see anything with Piotr Jan and O'Malley, we're going to see another Merab and O'Malley. If it were to happen again, I say that O'Malley will win. I think that close decision and his loss against Merab now, he likes to learn from his mistakes. He's, every single setback he's ever had in his career, he's came back a way better fighter. You know, we're talking about when he broke his foot, he came back, you know, blazed the trail to the top. And even when he was before he broke his foot, he was accused of, he did. He was pop positive for PEDs, but it was apparently just like some over-the-counter drug type thing, but I don't know, you know, if that's anything big or not. But he did get suspended for a year, and came back a way better fighter. So I think from his loss against Merab, he's definitely going to grow, and I think he's going to grow so much that Jan will never be in the octagon with him again. I don't see Jan blazing a trail to the top again. I don't see him being a champion again. It's just, he's not the same Piotr Jan he was 5 years ago, you know? 5 years ago, that might be the most competitive division in the UFC, you know, one of. And, you know, now it's just, I don't think that's a realistic opponent for Piotr Jan.
Right. Okay. All right, let's go back to the other side. Frankie, you got Tyson Fury and Usyk coming up. What's your thoughts on that one?
I don't know. I think it's a dangerous fight for Tyson Fury, but we've seen this guy in Tyson Fury. We've seen this almost like I don't even know what the like a way he's just transcending different things. I mean, he's an older guy, doesn't look like he's in the tip-top shape, but he seems to perform so well. And I just think, I, you know, just to simply put it, I just think it's a dangerous fight for him. And but you know, when you're the top, you gotta fight the top.
Okay. Tony?
I think he's taking this one a little bit more serious than the first one. I don't think he really prepared for the first one, thinking it was going to be an easy task for him. And he learned the hard way, but the outcome is going to be the same regardless, even if he's trying to get ready for this one. He's not going to be doing it. Who's going to take it?
Okay. Z?
Some guys, you don't test twice. Simple as that. I caught it the first time. Usyk, he's Tyson Fury is going to do nothing but get older and slower. He looked real good in the first fight. He can't look. I mean, how much better do you want him to look against a guy who's not going to, like, Usyk's not going to change, but he still didn't get the beat on him. My Tyson Fury thing is, he gets the beat, he's going to look good on you. Ask everybody he fought. He gets the beat, he's going to look good on you. He never got the beat on Fury, on Usyk. Even when he hit him hard, Usyk still kept the beat of the fight. Usyk and Tyson Fury, he can't take that away from me. He can't take it away from him with power. He's not a one-punch power guy. Tyson Fury, he's not, as big as he is, he's not a one-punch knock you out guy. And that's what you're trying to be with Usyk. I don't pick him against Usyk at all. That's right. Decision again, probably clear.
And Usyk can't, he cannot take Jake Paul, by the way, either at all, never.
Caden, what do you think about Zari Welly and Tabitha Ricci? She really dominated Ricci. Everybody's asking what the hell happened there? What's your thoughts?
I thought it was a good fight. I don't know if it was the most entertaining fight per se, but it was definitely a winner. She dominated almost every single round, and but again, it was just a slow paced kind of methodical fight. I don't think there's much to talk about in this one. Leading up to it, I didn't really know much about either of the fighters. But honestly, if we're talking about some Tyson Fury, I kind of want a little bit of that. Tyson Fury, I know, Frankie, you were talking about comparing Tyson Fury to something. I know this will get Z going. If we're being honest, who I compare Tyson Fury to is Muhammad Ali. That clinching, that using his weight, I don't know. I've only seen it in one other fighter at the elite level, and that was Muhammad Ali. If Usyk and Fury were to fight again, I would definitely pick Usyk. I don't think Fury's going to be in that fighting shape like he was a couple years ago.
Yeah. Listen, I'm gonna have to. I have to chime in there. I appreciate your viewpoint, but I don't see that same finesse in Muhammad Ali.
He's pretty, but not that pretty.
I mean, Muhammad Ali was just a smooth technician, right? And so, what the problem with Fury is, he doesn't know how to use his reach, in my opinion. He just doesn't know how to use it because he's gotten close to this. I mean, Usyk's shorter than him. So, I mean, from a taller guy with some punching power, you should try to use that reach. And I don't think we've seen that out of him in many fights.
Frankie, you got to deal with the feet. Usyk has better and more educated feet than Fury. As good as Fury has, you see him against Klitschko, but Klitschko has one style. Usyk has the in-and-out style, and with the educated feet, he goes in and out around, and that's hard to deal with. I don't care, like, when you're tall and you extend your arms, you give your reach up to a point. When you give your reach up to a fighter, if you don't hit him, he has the advantage. And Usyk is the best at heavyweight. Here's what you don't see heavyweights do. You don't see many heavyweights faint. The second best is Fury at fainting. Just fainting. And these guys, so when we saw the first fight, you watch two guys kind of like educate boxing at a heavyweight level. We don't see that too much. One thing I'm going to say about that Ali comment is this. Fury does not have half the toughness that Ali. Fury does not have the best of chance in the world.
Wait, what about when he broke up against Wilder?
Fury,
that's tough.
He's tough, but guess what? Cunningham went ahead and knocked him down. Usyk went ahead and knocked him down. Fury has good recovery. His chin is kind of crazy to be that big. He has very good recovery. Oh, he's going to take the shot and get up, and he's going to do – he recovers real good. He goes down a little too easy, especially with lighter men that get the beat on him. Now, that's my issue with Fury. Fury, as big as he is, he's not the toughest guy. I mean, to be honest. Well, when I seen him, like, he got buckled by a few people. Fury, as big as he is, he's not – I mean – And the thing with that is this, too. Fury is older. The older you get, the less you can use your feet against a guy like Usyk, who's also getting older. But Usyk's style is more beneficial when you get older to me than Fury. For Fury to win the mate, he has to get sloppy. He has to get sloppy. He's going to have to eat some punches and walk in. Fury is not the guy tough enough to beat Usyk to do that to me. I mean, if he had a better chin, yes, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. He's going to go in and do it like CeeDee Cunningham. Against a guy like
Usyk is also a southpaw. So let's just go ahead and put it out there that southpaws are better. I'm just, mainly because I'm a southpaw.
Well, I mean, that's because you're a southpaw. That's because you're a southpaw. Oh, no, Frankie. I watch you fight, too. You're a southpaw. So when that right foot goes on the outside, I coach boxing, so I know. Don't let out. Don't or if you're a southpaw, the outside foot wins. Outside foot wins. And that's why I say Usyk has quicker and more educated feet. He got that angle on the last fight long. I watch the feet. I don't see anything that Tyson Fury is going to change unless he's going to catch Usyk with that one shot. He caught him last fight with that uppercut. Usyk ate it, backed away a little bit, said, okay, just like he did when Joshua caught him with the right. Backed away, said, okay. And then the next round, he dominated. Usyk's a guy who knows, both guys know how to control pace. Usyk knows how to do it better. Usyk is tough. He moved up the heavyweight, and he take that one shot toughly. Outside of that, as skilled as both guys are, I'm anticipating a highly educated heavyweight fight, which I enjoyed the last time, but I just think Usyk is going to win it cleaner.
Yeah, isn't Usyk older, right? Usyk's older than Fury, I think.
I think Fury's slightly older.
Okay.
Caden, what do you think about Izzy Antetokounmpo and Asana come back in with Imurov next week? What's your thoughts? Israel Antetokounmpo?
I don't know about this one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be $15 off your pay this week. All right. Hey, take my time.
Hardcore.
That's right. All right. Let's see what the lieutenant says. Derek Chisora versus Gerald Miller. What's your thoughts? Frankie?
Hey, hold on one second. I'm just taking another call. Go ahead.
Okay.
Sorry, I got to take a quick pause. That's $15. That's $15 off my pay too. Sorry.
$30 in less than a minute.
Gee,
yeah, see, if he had been a deputy, he wouldn't have to do that, Tony. He'd have a secretary
doing it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And city cops.
Wow.
What's your thoughts on Derek Kishore and Davey Miller?
Me or Z?
Oh, me?
You.
Let me
go to
the answer this before I get docked. Yeah, I don't want my money going. To be honest, Derek Kishore is older. Jared Miller never impressed me. At the same time, there's one thing Jared Miller does that Derek Kishore doesn't like. Or two things that Derek Kishore doesn't like. He kicks a hell of a punch. And when he's in proper shape, he will outwork the hell out of the youth to be that big. I don't think Chisora, he has a puncher's chance. And there's a guy that he's probably not going to knock out with one punch. Danny Dubois may, even as big as Miller was, I don't think he would have ever beat Danny Dubois. Because Danny Dubois made him work. He made him work, and Danny Dubois worked hard. Like, so it's not like he made him work. No, you're going to eat hard punches to the body, to the head. He wasn't able to knock Danny Dubois out, and he wasn't able to turn Danny Dubois. Jared Miller's problem is he has a high work rate. He's not a powerful puncher. His punches hurt. He's a heavyweight, but he's not going to get you out of there. At certain levels, these guys have chins. He's not going to get you out of there.
Okay.
So.
All right. Tony?
I agree mostly with what Z said. I mean, Chisora, a little bit older, but the last fight I watched with Babyface, I wasn't impressed at all. I was expecting a lot more, and I don't think anything's going to change at this point with his career personally, but. So, if anything, I would say maybe Chisora would knock him out, but I think it's going to go the distance, and I think it's going to go in Chisora's favor. That's the way I see that one going.
Oh.
Caden, what do you think about this?
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Frank. Great. I know you're back.
Yeah, Chisora is he's older, right? I mean, he's 40 years old. I mean –
I think it's over that.
So
yeah.
I mean, he's and Baby Miller is 36. I mean, they're both kind of there, but I mean, I just think I think Miller might be a little damaged from that Ruiz fight. So I mean, that's a tough fight, and it's a tough decision to do a majority draw. So we'll see what that looks like with that. But I think Miller has enough in there to beat Chisora.
And everybody wants to talk their last performances. Chisora went ahead and dropped Joe Joyce twice, if I'm correct. He put that, so he looked more impressive than Benny Miller, who had, I mean, that Andy Ruiz fight was war. And that deal, it takes something out of you. I'm going to be honest, like, Andy Ruiz was rocking the stops. And Baby Miller ate it. If Andy Ruiz rocks a shot like that, as sharp and hard hitting as Andy Ruiz is, Derek Chisora is a little more clubbing. I just don't see him hitting him as sharp or as hard. Here's the thing, though. Derek Chisora is a guy that you just not like. I love what I just saw. What I saw out of him against Joe Joyce. I was on. He lost the fight, if I'm correct. They I don't know if they gave him the draw, but that looked like a resurgence to me. It looked like I like that for sure. I like that version for sure. And if Baby Miller's not, if he's not on the par, I'm gonna have to deal with Tony. I mean, it might be a decision. If that Ruiz fight took something out of him. I don't see that. It might be a short saving. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Hey, Caden, Vicente Luque seems to be very upset that they called off his second fight with Nick Diaz. What's the problem?
Nick Diaz is the problem, if we're going to be, you know, 100% yep. here. It always is one of the Diaz brothers doing some stuff, getting in some trouble. You know, just the antics with the Diaz brothers, you got to love it, but sometimes it's just a little too much, especially, like, right now when they can't mm-hmm. really back it up. Like Nick, his prime was great. You know, he's out there fighting George St. Pierre and doing all that he did in Ultimate Fighter, and his whole UFC career was amazing. But mm-hmm. he is one of the Diaz brothers, and he has that gene that, you know, I'm from Stockton. I'm from Stockton, California. Everything is on my terms because I'm mm-hmm. the man. And honestly, I like it coming from Nate because I think he pulls it off better. But, you know, right now you got them both, and it's just, you know, they're in those points in their careers where they shouldn't even be fighting. They have nothing left to prove. Nate has nothing left to prove. Nick has nothing left to prove. Why the UFC would even try to get a fight with Nick Diaz, seriously promote it, and act like it's going to happen is insane. It's just like how they're trying to promote Conor McGregor coming back when that – we all know that will never happen. There's no way. If it happens, I will give somebody $50, you know, not too much, but a reasonable amount. But it's one of those fights that just won't happen. And he's just one of those
guys.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I agree. The Diaz brothers they need to hang it up. But unfortunately, I think they're too stupid to, or maybe they've been punch drunk. I don't know. I mean, but that's what. Just to be honest, I mean, these guys are super tough, and that's why they are fan favorites. Is because they know they're coming to war.
Exactly.
They have a good. They got a good record, but you know, Dana's about making some money. And so Dana's going to put those guys in there because they're going to put butts in the seats, you know, and they really need to be looking out for the health and safety of those two guys because every fight for them is a war. It reminds me of like a Philly sparring session. Those are wars. Every time those guys spar, it's not a training session. It's a fight. And those guys just won't give up. And unfortunately, somebody needs to step aside and say, look, man, you've made enough. You've proved your point. And it's time to hang it up.
Frank, yes. I have a question for you. How many fights have you had?
I had 35 professional fights. I finished out at 26-8.
Now, you have 35.
And I had one draw.
You have 35 mm-hmm. professional boxing matches, right?
Yes.
You are one of the sharpest talking persons that's ever came out that ring as far as 35 boxing matches.
Amen.
Listen to this. And one person I'm always going to say, I love the way Sugar Shane Mosley talked early in his career. I've heard him later. I love the way the Diaz brothers talk. Both of them talk like they're drunk all the time.
Yeah.
And they're not drunk. They're not drunk. They haven't had a shot of liquor.
Yeah.
That's my issue when it comes to certain things. Enough's enough. Why? Because I hear you talking from this, but they're talking and it's not a plague thing. It's a regular thing. Every time I hear you talk, that's what we get. That's a problem. Enough's enough as far as fighting goes. That's all I have to say to that.
Well, I think that's the bigger picture, right? I think the fighters are getting hurt more in the gym than the actual fights, right? I mean, that's taking a toll.
Training is always
but,
hard.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, I one of the things that I always did as a training, I always had two different headgears at all times. I would switch them out every sparring session because, you know, those things, you get sweat, the Vaseline, the padding gets all matted down. And then I would buy new headgear every quarter. And so I would switch that out. But if I had a typically hard sparring session on Monday I wasn't sparring again until Friday, right? So, I mean, maybe a little unorthodox, but I wasn't doing Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You know what I mean? A sparring session. If I had, especially when I got to the level of, like, fighting 10 rounds and 12 rounds, you gotta spar 12 to 14 rounds on a fight like that. You're not gonna push yourself and go sparring 10 rounds on Monday and 10 rounds on Wednesday. But a lot of fighters are doing that, and I think that's what's taking the toll.
You talk about a 10-round professional fight without headgear. If you take too many of those, you get what I mean? Either you have to be real slick or you have to be kind of special for that not to really, really affect your brain.
Yeah. Well, and let's be honest with Nate and the Diaz brothers. Let's be honest. MMA fighting with a 4-ounce glove on. I mean, they're listen.
And they want to punch punches even? I'm with that.
Yeah, a four-ounce glove is only protecting your hands. It ain't protecting the other guy's face. So, I mean, and then plus you're getting kicked and elbowed and kneed. I just think I don't watch MMA as much, but I do like watching it. But I don't think it's been around, to see those complete injuries, but you're starting to see some of these guys' fine motor skills starting to slow down from both boxing and MMA. And I never did MMA because I'm too pretty. I don't like getting kicked in the face, so I think I'm good.
You know what? You're an officer. You'll do MMA when you have to.
True that.
Hey, Tony, what'd you think of the Barrios draw with Ramos?
Honestly, I had Ramos winning it by a little bit. I would like to see that one again. That was a great fight. I don't think Barrios was at his peak that night. I think he could have given a little bit more. He looked like he was something was on his mind or something was bothering him. But Abel Ramos, I think I said it last week, I was talking about him, and you can't ever rule him out because the guy could come out of nowhere and he could change the fight, and he did. He did change it. And honestly, I had him by just a little bit more. I think he should have won it, but let's see a rematch on that one.
Okay.
If you don't mind me chiming in, again, I'm sorry. Ramos, no, Barrios was doing his thing until Ramos hit his chin. Changed the tone of the fight. Now, everything... Barrios had to start. He started fighting, trying to fight on the back foot more. And Barrios is not a back foot fighter. He's long, and he has a reach over a more of the opponent, but he's not a back foot fighter by nature. And all of a sudden, he's doing this thing. He looked good. Like the first foot, I think maybe I forget what round he got clipped in. I know he got clipped, and then he got knocked down. I forget how it went, or he got knocked down clipped. I forget what order it went in. Whatever round it was he got hit, that changed the dimension of the fight. Barrios
he was watching it after that. He was really paying attention after.
Yeah, exactly.
Frank?
It changed the tenure of the fight. So they called it a draw. I thought it was a draw. I have to mention the fight after that one in between the main event, the Seriano and Taylor fight. Y'all seen that one, right?
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
All right. Now I'm gonna say one thing. When it got rough for Katie Taylor, she started putting her head down, and one thing about it. Don't mind you swinging with your head down, but you have to lead with your fist. And Katie Taylor was leading with her head an awful lot. Amanda Nunez, she's a straight up fighter. She doesn't bend her head down. That's actually to her default because at times you have to change levels and dip. You have one fighter when Siriano got close, Taylor would lean her head down and swing wild.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, she would lean her head down and butt heads with Siriano. I thought that the Russian and Wanderer more times. I thought it was a very close fight, but I thought, like, Cignano won clearly just because Katie Taylor, she got in panic mode. If a judge can't tell when a fighter's in panic mode, and which a throwing is not more effective than the other fighter, I don't care if we throw more. It's not an amateur fight. Cignano was landing more effective punches. At the same time, she had Katie Taylor panicking. I'm not saying now. Katie Taylor, she won some of the late rounds because she fought her ass off when Cignano, she fought her. Like, when Cignano was that, and she took a break. Nah, Katie Taylor didn't take a break. She did not take a break at all. But
we call
she won the fight.
We call it a signal 41 in Sarasota Z. called a robbery. She got robbed in that fight.
Well, here's the key, too. And when they were interviewing and when they were talking before the fight, I heard they both mentioned, when I heard somebody say, when the rematch happens, I was like, okay, well, that led me to a little bit of suspicion. That's all.
Yeah, listen, this is going to be an unpopular decision or viewpoint, but I thought Taylor won it. I just, I think the ref should have done his job a little bit better to count those headbutts. I mean, she clearly was doing it intentionally. And I think, even in the first fight, that was another war, and that same thing happened, right? But I think when you look at the final, like I was trying to explain this, to some people, I think Serrano definitely pressed the fight. She definitely pressed the action. She was in her face the entire time. And that's, I think, where you see that panic set in, as you talked about earlier, right? And I think. But I think when you go back and look at the CompuBox numbers, I mean, Taylor, she threw 375, landed 147. So Serrano threw 624, but only landed 173 of those. I mean, I was definitely going back and forth. Serrano threw more, doesn't make it more effective. And I think if you really look at the back end of that fight, her percentages were so low in thrown versus landed. And I think that's why they won. I mean, I think Taylor was a consistent fighter that was landing the more effective punches and not just throwing the punches and not being as effective. So I think Taylor won that fight.
I have to say one thing, and just in the fight, we have to disagree on one point. Taylor threw more punches. She landed more punches. The more effective punches were thrown, were landed by Cignano. Why? Because you don't land more effective punches. You don't put Katie Taylor in panic mode by landing ineffective punches. And she was in panic mode from round like four on. It was a 10-round fight. So from round four on, Kelly Taylor got into the mode where I can't use my feet anymore because she's cutting the ring off and she's bringing pressure. So, Cignano was missing a lot, but when she landed, it hurt her. It had substantially more effect than Kelly Taylor hitting her a million times, ringing and just ringing.
That's
just my estimation now.
Sure. Yeah, I think when you look at the power punches, I think the percentages are much higher for Taylor. But I've been in those fights where you punch in a person in the face and you're almost hurting your hand because they continue to come forward. And I think that's what panic.
Sash don't tell everything because Sash tells everything to the people on paper, but the people in the ring. What means? Fighters can't fake the. I'm telling the guy who has 35 fights. The fighters can't fake what they feel. Fighters can't fake act. So when you see Katie Taylor, she reacted because it does not. She's getting hit harder than she's hitting. She can't move the way she wants to move anymore. So she and I'm going to say this. Katie Taylor fought her ass off, and she won late rounds fighting her ass off. Just by saying, I know, kind of being, not, you know what, slowing down and not, because she had to slow down. She's getting punched in the face a lot. She's getting headbutted. She had to slow down a little bit.
Okay, so, we're just at the end of it.
Yeah,
we're just at the end of our time here. And so we're going to have to cut this short here. But, Frank, I appreciate everything coming on with us. And tell your family we appreciate the time you gave us tonight. We really – I know you were just coming in when you got on with us. So, I can't say enough about you, what a nice guy you are and a good friend you are, and how proud all of us here are of you being promoted again. We've always been proud of you as a fighter and as a gentleman, but now to have this honor, that's great. So you want to lead us out?
I appreciate the time, and like I said, I think the goal for me in both my boxing career and my police career is always to treat people with respect, to be able to widen my lens a little bit to look, past policing and see what truly affects communities. And I think that's the goal that of all law enforcement is we want to solve the problem and help the community solve the problem together as a collaborative effort. I am so thankful and I'm humbled for not only my boxing career, but for my police career. And I'm thankful for you, Frank. I mean, you've been a huge supporter. You've definitely given me my time to shine. And I can't thank you enough for this opportunity. And like I said, I think the last thing I'll say is, hey, Jake Paul, if you're ready to fight, I'm ready to come off the couch.
Don't be signing any deals either. You go knock his ass out for real.
Yeah, listen.
I'll put my money on Frank.
I'm going to come off the couch. Yeah, I'm going to come off the couch and still fight this dude. I won't even have to train. So I think I could do 8 rounds in my sleep. But, yeah, like I said, I think this profession, as I've been in there 21 years, it's always been rewarding for me, and it's still a noble profession, and I hope we can still continue to build bridges and between community and police, and see each other's viewpoint. So I really appreciate this time.
Hey, Frank, I got one quick question for you. Was it, and for both Franks actually, but wasn't Bernadette DePino from his department?
No, she was from Maryland.
No. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she was from Baltimore. Yeah, she originally was from Baltimore, then she went to Maryland State Police, and then she came down here and screwed up.
I'll leave it at that. Thank you for your service, Frankie. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Frankie. Tony, we'll let go.
Yep. Next. Have a good Thanksgiving.
You too.
Thank you, Frankie. You too. You and the family. Tony?
Yeah, great show. Love having some new blood on, and looking forward to Thanksgiving. Hope everyone has a great Thanksgiving with their families this upcoming week. And just so you know, like we spoke yesterday, Frank, we're one more step closer to a new platform. So we'll be working on that, and I'll be in touch with you this week on that. So hopefully we'll go to that at the beginning of the year if it all works out.
Yep, sir. Ty? I'm sorry, Z?
Absolutely. This has been a wonderful show. I darn sure want to thank Frankie Philippone. I love talking boxing with him. Tony already knows I love talking boxing with him. Caden, you're my MMA guy. Butch, you guys, you bring it in. I want to thank everybody. This show is definitely in memory of Bob, Chris Mel, and Dr. Chris. And I won't say any fighting words, please you call.
Caden?
Another great show with y'all, and I'll absolutely be on next weekend. But I want to say have a happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Man, go out there, eat as much turkey as you can. It's really a competition this year. I'm putting all my money on the table, mostly against you, Pops. so I can eat the most right. turkey out of anybody.
Ooh, you're already $30 down there, brother.
I'm a growing boy, man. I'm a growing boy. I'm eating all the turkey.
I'll be down in New Orleans. I'll be down in New Orleans with Thanksgiving.
Oh, nice.
What do they call that stuff that you make?
Jambalaya, gumbo.
Gumbo. Gumbo.
They have all that.
That's good.
Yeah.
For anybody that doesn't know, Zito is a Class A gumbo maker.
Yeah.
He learned from the best. The lady that taught him was the lady who used to feed my family on Christmas Eve, and we always worry about her, make sure she's okay. And Z, say hello to your mom for us and wish her happy Thanksgiving and everybody else happy Thanksgiving. We won't be on next week because it is a holiday week. We have zero or less than zero population, so we won't be back. We'll be back in 2 weeks. But I appreciate everything you guys have done, and we really appreciate you being so up to date with the fights, and it gives us, you know. We are at 272,670 listeners worldwide every week, and I can't say enough about that. These programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation. For the men and women of police and fire services, the men and women of men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of police and fire services, the doctors and nurses, and especially those first responders who take care of COVID. These programs are dedicated to those who lost their lives on the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Yaslett, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, Sergeant Tom Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant James O'Connor, Philadelphia Police Department, Sergeant Chris Levake, Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police Department, Patrolman Anafo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Josh Meyer, Nassau County Sheriff's Department, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Artis Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Fikus, Wilmington Fire Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Chief Al Hogel, Longwood Key Police Department, Deputy Mike Hargrove, Pinellas County Sheriff's Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Trooper Joe Bullock, Florida Highway Patrol, Trooper Zachary Benn, Florida Highway Patrol, Sergeant Chris Fitzgerald, Philadelphia Police Department, Sergeant Ramon Mendez, Philadelphia Police Department, Fire Chief Corey Companti Air, Buffalo Creek Fire Department, and Deputy Ravi Raspani, Manatee County Sheriff's Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sunshine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your family always in the palm of his hand. Good night. God bless. And for everybody, a very happy and safe Thanksgiving. Remember, if you drink, don't drive. If you drive, don't drink. We appreciate it.
there a town with mind of flame, saw ash and strength and length of day.
County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. All units be advised, 1999's response to his last emergency. May God rest his soul and all the souls of the faithful departed. Good night, Bob. We love you and we miss you.